10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.
I'm John Batchelor, the American University, in question by the American people. And that is a problem I learned from John Marcus, writing most recently for the Hechinger Report, about something you can observe routinely now, alienation from university campuses by the American electorate. At the same time, university campuses voting in one direction for one party or another, depending upon the epoch. However, the university itself is not the venerated institution I grew up with in the 20th century. It is something much closer to transactional institution that is much, much bombarded from all sides and is sagging under the weight. I learned this from John's most recent article, helping me understand how we got here as well. Mr. Marcus, John, a very good evening to you. The current state of the public opinion of the universities is very, very poor, even over these last years. I learned from you in your article that there's not one driver. When did it start, John? Is there a go date when the university peaked, and after that it was never as well regarded? Good evening to you.
Thanks so much for having me. Yes, there were a number of sort of trigger points here. The first was the Great Recession in 2008 for a number of reasons. One was that, like everybody else in our society, universities were financially constrained. But they also, universities often benefit from economic downturns. And so their enrollment actually went up. The last peak of enrollment was in 2011. Many people who were unemployed went back to school to get credentials that they thought would help them get new jobs. And that helped universities and colleges get through state budget appropriations and other problems that they faced. 2008 is also an important moment because people stopped having babies, as also happens during economic downturns. And so if you consider that the principal customer for a university is an 18-year-old, and you add 18 to 2008, this fall is when we begin to see a big fall off in the number of 18-year-olds. So that all began to happen in 2008, 2011. And for the entire decade of the 2010s, universities knew that the demographic decline was coming. They were watching public skepticism grow of what they were getting, what people were getting for their money. They didn't really do anything about it. And then then COVID hit. And as with other institutions, that took a toll. And then we found ourselves in the political moment wherein, at least in particular in this second Trump administration term, universities were targets of attack. But because all of this had begun in the 2010s, they were really easy targets by that moment. People didn't trust them anymore. Another really important moment was 2013, when the federal government began to collect and make public information about exactly what we all were getting for our money. And it turned out to be not as much as we thought. Graduation rates, again, I'm not talking about individual institutions. Many of them have very high graduation rates, very good outcomes. But in general, fewer than half of students in four-year programs graduated in 4 years. A quarter of first-year students didn't come back for the second year. They dropped out. 43 million Americans have now gone to college and left without a degree. Many of them have debt. That's a population larger than the number of people who live in Canada, of angry, unhappy customers who have kids who they won't send to college. And you mentioned in your introduction, public opinion surveys, those very clearly show that universities and colleges have lost a lot of collateral with the American public. More importantly and more tangibly, the proportion of high school graduates going straight to college is way down because families don't think they're getting a return on that investment. So we peaked at 70% of high school graduates going straight to college. That fell to the low 60s in 10 years. That's a really big drop. And that's another big problem of the many problems colleges are facing.
You established then that it didn't start with Trump and that it peaked around 08, 09. I want to call an anecdote up that compares and contrasts. In the university that I entered into in 1966, I was made aware that it was possible because I had a loan from the federal government through the university guaranteed, and I was to repay it when I graduated. I think it was the National Security Act under the Johnson administration. This is the Great Society of the 1960s. It was commonplace. I always puzzled about it at the time. How can I, a student studying religion, be a part of the National Security Act? But it was Vietnam. It was possible to pass through Congress in that fashion. And my university blossomed for it. Many did, now I reflect back. That was a smart program. Did it go away in the intervening 60 years? Or is it still there in some substance?
Yes, the second, the latter. It's still there. But what's happened since the 1960s is that the cost of higher education has increased significantly faster, as your listeners will know, than the rate of inflation. And loan interest rates are surprisingly high for federally subsidized student loans. So right now we're coming up on almost $2 trillion worth of student loan debt overall. That's bogging down the rest of the economy because people are putting off marriage and buying a house and buying a car. They have credit since during COVID, as people will recall, there was a pause on repayment of student loans. When that resumed, many students almost immediately went into default. That affects their credit, their credit in other areas like getting a mortgage. So all of these things have had kind of carry-on effects. I find we've been writing a lot. Well, and one of the ultimate outcomes of this is the colleges are closing. And there's a new credible projection that 442 colleges, one quarter of the total, are at risk right now of closing or merging in the next 10 years. And when we write about colleges at the close, I will tell you that a lot of the public commentary is good riddance. And, you know, they deserved it. Whether that's true or not, it does affect us all. Not everyone has to go to college, but we need college-educated people. That's why the National Security Act existed, to produce more college-educated Americans. And we were at the top of the world by all of these measures. And now, incontrovertibly, the preeminence of U.S. higher education in the world is starting to decline.
Another observation I've made over the years is at some point in the early part of this century, the recruiting by universities and secondary schools, private secondary schools, turned from Korea to China. When did that happen? Was there a go date? Was that China making the decision? Suddenly, beautiful children with big shoulders, tall, show up at secondary schools, one near me, and at universities that I attended. They hadn't been there before, and I believe they've now largely disappeared. They were paying full tuition. Was that a phenomenon that the universities were ready for?
It was a phenomenon the universities created. As their enrollment began to decline, they had this alternative market of customers, which were international students, and they became addicted to that. I live in Boston, where it's a part of the country, the Northeast and the Midwest is where the enrollment is most challenged. We have the oldest population and the flattest birth rates. And so either we import American students from other parts of the country, which became more difficult because it is also true that institutions in the Northeast are more expensive than in the rest of the country, or we import them from abroad. And so you begin to see this huge increase in the number of international students being recruited by universities and colleges. They did it. They created that phenomenon. They became addicted to international students. They particularly became addicted to international students at the graduate level because that's where they make the most money. And so you have graduate programs with huge numbers of international students. Those are now at huge risk because the number of international students fell dramatically last year. The other day, there was another new projection that there'll be 111,000 fewer international students again this year. That's more than a 10% drop, an additional 10% drop. And that's already taking a gigantic financial toll on colleges and universities because those students subsidized Americans. Universities never described them that way. Universities talked about recruiting international students to create more cultural diversity on their campuses. And that no doubt happened. But what they really wanted was the money. And so what you've seen is at the moment, since the beginning of 2024, more than 300 universities have made budget cuts and layoffs. Of those, a growing number are very explicitly saying it's been because of the decline in the number of international students. And the result is that they're getting rid of majors and academic departments and laying off advisors and doing all of these things that now affect domestic students. So it's kind of a case of be careful what you wish for. While not one single institution would talk to me about it, it is also true that all of those institutions have raised their tuition. And when I ask them how much of that tuition increases because of the decline in your number of international students, not one single institution would give me an answer. But it's logical to assume that American students are going to now have to pay more for college because international students don't want to come here anymore. I'll say, by the way, that as a higher education reporter, since the beginning of the Trump administration, if you ask a university whether the sky is blue, they won't answer the question. No one will say anything because they're afraid of drawing attention to themselves.
Deans, the administration. My memory in the 1960s is we had one dean of students and he had a secretary. That was it. To visit him was easy. You just go to his office and walk in. Do you have an appointment? No. Well, the dean will see you in X number of minutes. That was a campus, I guess I had a graduating class of 800. It wasn't small, but it wasn't large. Now, I don't, because I'm not quite sure, they have whole buildings for administrators of universities. Is this government regulation that did this, John?
Universities will say it is, but I'm skeptical. I'm particularly skeptical because so there was a committee that was set up by Congress to study what you knew already from the name of the committee. It was to study overregulation. So already there's like an assumption that there's overregulation of universities. The members of the committee were 100% university presidents. There were no advocates for students. There were no consumer advocates. And the report of the committee was written by, as often happens in our democracy, the lobbying organization for universities, the American Council on Education.
Right.
And in the report, they cited a supposed figure from Vanderbilt University that it spent, I don't remember the exact number, but just an outrageous amount of money on regulation. And when I asked Vanderbilt University to break that down for me, they wouldn't do it. It took 9 months of chipping away before we finally found out that it was a completely made up number. It had to do with regulations that all businesses face around employment. It had to do with research regulations that had nothing to do with the cost of college, that had nothing to do with students, and much of which the federal government was reimbursing Vanderbilt for. And in fact, the cost of regulation was a tiny fraction of what they said it was. So that moment, I hope, created some skepticism around the university narrative that this is all about regulation. It's just about that they can. And so they've hired, the number of administrators kept going up and up and up. It's gone up through economic downturns. It's gone up through financial crises that universities faced. It is beginning to very slowly go down now. We've been watching it by like 1%. But when the president of Yale set up a committee of faculty to study why Americans have lost faith with higher education, one of the questions they tried to answer was the degree to which the number of non-academic employees at Yale had increased, and they were not able to figure it out. And they said that the difficulty even finding out how many administrators they were was the answer to their question, that there were too many.
John Marcus, writing for Hechinger Report. We know what the problem is. Too expensive and disinterest by the public. When we come back, what is to be done? I'm John Batchelor. We'll be right back. I'm John Batchelor with John Marcus, writing for the Hechinger Report about the modern university. It didn't start with Trump, but the solution begins here. And I'm looking at the faculty to lead. Is the faculty in a position to take control of the university? Going through a recession can be a very healthy thing, John. We agree with the economists, because you out with the old, in with the new. What survives creative destruction. Is that something the faculty is interested in doing to regain the status that they enjoyed when I was in school?
Yeah, you just hit the nail right on the head. I'm not sure that the faculty is interested in leading the transformation of higher education, but they're more willing to follow than they used to be. And the reason is, and I visit college campuses, they are watching their friends at other universities lose their jobs, even when they have tenure. They're watching academic departments close. They're watching colleges and universities close. They understand this now to be an existential crisis. So, I was visiting a university whose president made substantial changes in the way the core curriculum was managed, and how the university would assess the knowledge of students. This was a liberal arts university, and liberal arts university are particularly challenged at making a case for themselves because the public, I think wrongly, doesn't think that a liberal arts education leads to anything. And I say that not only because I was a liberal arts major, but because employers actually want those skills like critical thinking and how to communicate and how to work in teams. So this president came in with a really significant plan to overhaul the university, and the faculty overwhelmingly supported it. So I do think we're seeing a big change culturally on university campuses. I'm not sure you're going to see faculty standing up and saying, we'll take it from here. But I think they're going to be more willing to accept change. This isn't universal. One of the, I think, most fascinating developments in higher ed is one that a lot of people are missing, which is that there's been an entirely new degree invented over the last year. It's called an applied bachelor's degree, also sometimes a career-focused bachelor's degree. It is a bachelor's degree that you can get in 3 years instead of four, and with 90 credits instead of 120. And it's typically in a vocationally focused field such as criminal justice. And it's attracting people that wouldn't otherwise go to college because of the time and cost. And it's spreading like wildfire. It goes in between a 2-year community college degree and a 4-year bachelor's degree. Now is this new 3-year degree. Now, this makes a great deal of sense. And yet faculty have now, as of the last few weeks, come out against it, saying that what we really need, this is the old refrain that we heard before COVID, we need more money, give us more money. And this new degree is overlooking the intellectual requirements of students. And that's the old kind of arguments that you would hear from faculty. And so we'd still hear them now and then, but I think faculty on campuses are generally more receptive now to change.
We've not addressed STEM directly. Is that also in an existential crisis?
STEM is in a crisis that begins in America at the K-12 level. Because as you know, and your listeners will know, we're really bad at math in the United States. When you look at comparative testing, international testing, we come in somewhere around or maybe now just below average. This got worse during COVID. So what happens is in STEM fields at the higher education level, we have been very dependent on international students, and in particular at the graduate level. And this includes fields that support AI, the most important industry on Earth right now. We were hugely dependent on international graduate students to come here, do the work, do the research, fill the jobs after they graduated, and even start the companies, which, by the way, then employed Americans. They're not coming anymore. China has far surpassed the United States in the production of STEM PhDs. Now, that's partly because their population is much bigger than ours, but the pace of increase is 5 times faster than in the United States of production of doctoral degrees in STEM in China. So we're falling behind.
John Marcus, writing for the Hechinger Report. It's not upbeat, but it is very convincing that this is not about the Trump administration's politics. This is about institutions, the university institutions, dealing with crises over a long period of time and not successful, so try something new. I'm John Batchelor.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.